Indeed. My name is Kevin Renane, and this is Tuned Into Music. This is the second of two podcasts devoted to the first wave of San Francisco bands in the late 1960s. Imagine this. It's 1966, and you live in San Francisco. You're young, and everything seems possible. Not only does it seem possible, it seems like it's happening every day all around you. You and your friends are living in ways that nobody could have imagined just a couple of years ago. And the media hasn't figured it out yet. That's going to change soon. And once the media comes and draws attention to what you're doing, drugs are just going to be about getting high. And sex is going to just be about getting laid. And bell-bottoms are going to be pants you can buy in Sears and Target. And clueless columnists are going to come up with and popularize the name hippies for you and your friends. But that hasn't happened yet. You call yourself freaks. You and your friends wear bell-bottoms because they're the cheapest pants you could find at the local Army-Navy surplus. Drugs are about a shared quest to expand personal consciousness and interpersonal awareness. Sex? Well, sex is still about getting laid. Some things never change. But a lot of people are thinking about sex in terms of getting laid without the fear and the hang-ups and the confusion that seems to characterize so much sex in the straight world. And the music? Oh, wow, the music is so far out. There are so many good local bands. There's The Dead, the Quicksilver Messenger Service, Country Joe and the Fish, and those two local bands with the chick singers. There's Jefferson Airplane with Grace Slick, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Sharp Intellect, and Absolutely No Patience for Bullshit. And then there's that other one, the chick that sings with such raw and naked emotion that her microphone bleeds. And each one of them, in their very different ways, have voices that are so powerful they could supply all of San Francisco's electric needs for a decade. We listened to Jefferson Airplane the last time. This time we're going to go hear that other band. With apologies to Bill Graham. Four gentlemen and one great, great broad. Big Brother and the Holding Company. Big Brother with the incomparable Janis Joplin singing I Need a Man to Love. Big Brother and the Holding Company was a quartet composed of drummer Dave Getz, bass player Peter Albin, and guitarists Sam Andrew and James Gurley when Janis joined in 1966. At the end of 66, they recorded their first album, which was released in January of 67, but nobody paid a whole lot of attention to it outside of San Francisco. That all changed in June of 1967 when Janis and Big Brother knocked them completely out at the Monterey Pop Festival. The band recorded and released its second and last album in 1968. That album was Cheap Thrills, and Rolling Stone, the rock magazine that rode to fame and fortune on the back of the San Francisco music scene, initially turned up its nose and called the album, quote, a real disappointment. The reviewer went on to write, the title, Cheap Thrills, is an appropriate one, for that is to a great extent what this record has to offer. It seems that at least some members of the rock press had their heads buried so deeply in their own rectums that they couldn't hear very much of what was going on outside. Fortunately, most of the rest of the world didn't have this problem, and Cheap Thrills was an immediate and huge success. One of the many highlights of Cheap Thrills was Sam Andrews' outstanding arrangement of the Gershwin classic Summertime. Andrews' arrangement not only provided an ideal framework for Joplin's very moving vocals, it also included a terrific dual guitar break of the kind that Big Brother was well known for in the San Francisco music community. From the Cheap Thrills album, the Sam Andrews arrangement of Summertime.
Nothing's going to harm you now.
With a million-selling album on the charts, Joplin announced that she was leaving Big Brother and the holding company at the end of 1968. With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, this now looks like a crushingly bad decision, both for Joplin and for Big Brother. Joplin left in December, taking Sam Andrew with her to form the Cosmic Blues Band. That group lasted about a year, after which Andrew returned to Big Brother and Joplin went on to form the Full Tilt Boogie Band. Since the 1970s, Big Brother and the Holding Company have been performing off and on with a changing lineup of musicians. Joplin's Full Tilt Boogie Band was in the process of recording their first album when she died of a heroin overdose in New York in October of 1970. We'll return to Big Brother and the Holding Company later in the show. Now we're going to listen to a group that many consider to be the band that best captures this time and place in music, the Grateful Dead. Like many of the first wave of San Francisco bands, the Dead formed in 1965 and released their first self-titled album in 1967. The Dead would play anytime, anywhere, and as a result, they were all over the early San Francisco music scene. Their method of operation was to open their ears to a wide variety of music and then jam on stage waiting for lightning to strike. Because they played so often and because they were such great musicians, this approach worked well for them as a strategy for live gigs. It didn't work so well in the studio. After three albums that failed to capture the excitement of the Dead's live performance and didn't sell very many copies, they found themselves facing an enormous debt acquired from time spent noodling in the studio waiting for magic to happen. To pay off that debt, they released a double live album in 1969 called Live Dead, and finally, people who had not heard them play live had a chance to hear what all the excitement was about. By rights, the track we should play from that album is the monumental jam Dark Star, but at over 23 minutes, it wouldn't leave us room to survey any other groups on the show. So, another track from Live Dead, The 11. Thank you. Of the first wave of San Francisco bands, the one with the most convoluted and in many ways the most interesting story is Quicksilver Messenger Service. Quicksilver grew out of conversations between folk singer Dino Valente and masterful electric guitarist John Cipollina, along with a friend of Valente's named Jim Murray, who sang and played guitar and harmonica. Almost immediately, and before they could really do anything about pulling a band together, Valente was busted and sent to prison. Right around the same time, another friend of Valente's named David Freiberg was released from prison and went to hang out with Cipollina and Murray. Before he went to jail, Freiberg had played in a group with Paul Kantner, who went on to join Jefferson Airplane, and David Crosby, who became a member of the Byrds and later Crosby, Stills, and Nash. With Cipollina and Murray, Freiberg played bass, and the three of them picked up yet another guitar player, Skip Spence, who was the guy that Moby Grape would later be built around. The four of them then began rehearsing at a club in San Francisco called The Matrix. I told you this was going to get convoluted. Hang in there now. The club where the band was rehearsing, The Matrix, was owned by Marty Balin. Balin was in the process of putting together a band of his own, and he convinced Skip Spence to leave Quicksilver, switch from guitar to drums, and join Balin's band, which was soon to go on to great fame and fortune as the Jefferson Airplane. Balin then went back to Quicksilver and turned them on to drummer Greg Elmore and singer-guitarist Gary Duncan, who had played together in a garage rock band called The Brogues. This group, of Gary Duncan and Jim Murray on guitar and vocals, John Cipollina on lead guitar, David Freiberg on bass, and Greg Elmore on drums, like so many of these other bands, coalesced in 1965 and took the name Quicksilver Messenger Service. They quickly became one of the most well-known and popular of the original San Francisco bands. Quicksilver wasn't interested when the record companies discovered what was happening in San Francisco and gobbled up all the local bands. They waited until 1967, when all the other bands' albums were just coming out, to sign with Capitol Records. As a result, their self-titled first album didn't come out until 1968, and I think it's one of the best albums of the lot that sounds just as good today as it did when it was initially released. From Quicksilver Messenger Service, the lead track, Pride of Man.
Dust again. Oh God, pride of man. rich in treasure, wide in fame. You bow unto your God of gold. Your pride of might shall be your shame. For only God can lead his people back unto the earth.
At the heart of Quicksilver Messenger Service lay the dual guitar attack of John Cipollina and Gary Duncan. These two guys could play with each other, around each other, and off each other like nobody else at the time. We wouldn't hear guitar interplay like this again until Duane Allman hooked up with Dickie Betts and the Allman Brothers in 1969. Listen to Cipollina and Duncan on this instrumental for two guitars, which is perfectly named for the guitar players in Quicksilver Messenger Service. Here they are, Gold and Silver. Dino Valente, the folk singer whose conversations with Cipollina started the process that produced Quicksilver Messenger Service, got out of jail and ended up joining the band he had helped to start so many years before. Big mistake. Once Valente joined, he took control of the band and turned this brilliant improvisational guitar-led group into a backing band for his folk-oriented singer-songwriter material. After two albums of this stuff, Cipollina and Freiberg quit, and although Quicksilver continued on with a variety of different players, the magic was gone. Before we go, let's return to the music of Big Brother and the Holding Company. This song is so powerful that it has to come at the end. We're going to listen to the track that was originally placed at the end of Side 2 of Cheap Thrills, Janis Joplin's tour de force performance, Ball and Chain.
Tell me why. Hey. Thank you.
29 gentlemen and two great, great broads. Jefferson Airplane, Country Joe and the Fish, Moby Grape, Big Brother and the Holding Company, The Grateful Dead, and Quicksilver Messenger Service. What a terrific group of bands. And before the media came in and the albums came out, this was just your local music scene in San Francisco. Good times. This concludes the second of our two podcasts devoted to the bands that came out of San Francisco in the 1960s. But that's not the end of the story. In a future podcast, we'll listen to the second wave of bands that began coming out of San Francisco in 1969. My name is Kevin Murnane, and this is Tuned Into Music. You take care of each other. I need you to-